you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Welcome to Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. I'm John Horn in for Larry Mantle this week. Thank you for being with us. We have lots of movies to discuss, and coming up later in the hour, I talk with comedian Joe Coy. He stars in the new film Easter Sunday, which is loosely based on his life and his family. Our conversation is coming up, so stick around for that. But first, we kick it off with the new releases of the week. Critics joining me today are Christy Lemire, co-host of Breakfast All Day, the YouTube and podcast series, Peter Rayner, film critic for the Christian Science Monitor, Charles Solomon of Animation Scoop and Animation Magazine, and Tim Cogshell of Alt Film Guide and Cinegods.com. It's a full house, or when we get to movies that the critics really don't like, maybe a royal flush. We're going to kick off with the action thriller Bullet Train. It stars Brad Pitt, Joey King, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Bad Bunny, who might be more famous now than Brad Pitt, Brian Tyree Henry, Michael Shannon, and Sandra Bullock also make appearances. The film is directed by David Leitch and written by Zach Olkwitz. It's based on the 2010 Japanese novel Maria Beetle by Kotaro Isaku. Christy, why don't you get us going?
Brad Pitt is an assassin for hire who is trying to find some zen in his very stressful life. And he gets an assignment to hop onto this bullet train. All he has to do is get on in Tokyo, grab the suitcase, get off at the next stop. But he's not doing killings anymore. He's doing like easy snatch and grab stuff. It's all part of his new leaf he's turned over. And it's not nearly that easy, of course, because also on this bullet train are the people who have the suitcase and other people who also want the suitcase. And it's very like fast talking, fast moving, super high energy. David Leitch directed the second Deadpool movie and Atomic Blonde, which was a blast, and like uncredited directed the first John Wick. Previously, he had been a stuntman and a stunt choreographer. And so that element of this is always a lot of fun. But it is increasingly just hitting and quipping and hitting and quipping. And if you guys talked about The Gray Man recently, this is very similar to that, but like slightly better in terms of the complexity of the choreography, in terms of the way that they use this space, in terms of what the quippy things are that they are saying to each other in between beating the stuffing out of each other. It's a lot of fun, but it's over long. Brad Pitt keeps it going. He keeps it buoyant. I love this phase of Brad Pitt's career where he's a little goofy and he's kind of making fun of his pretty boy image. And he's just in like this bucket hat and glasses and he's just kind of a goofball. I love when he toys with his own persona that way. So there's fun to be had. The Aaron Taylor Johnson, Brian Tyree Henry relationship is strangely sweet and they have a lot of nice chemistry, but it just is the same movie over and over. And it's like one or two subplots too many or one or two flashbacks too many. And there's a thing with a snake, like they totally forget about the snake for giant periods of time and then they come back to the snake. It's just like too much, but I guess you don't want minimalism in a film like this.
So moves faster than an Amtrak train, but oddly enough, gets there just as slowly. Peter, your take.
Well, yeah, certainly it's not a minimalist movie, but I think the maximalist part of this is a little too maximal. There's just too much going on in this movie. Most of it is sort of, you know, splatterfest, repetitive stuff. I'm not trying to be a Puritan, but I think, you know, when you have all these scenes of heads being blown apart, you know, like smashed zucchini, and it's a bit much. Although it's all in fun, ha-ha. At one point when I was going to write about this, I thought, well, maybe it would be good to do a think piece on, you know, why we need movie stars, you know, like Brad Pitt. But then I thought, well, it's the answer in this case is to get us through, you know, middling movies like this. And really, what's the point of that? He's demonstrated that he's, you know, quite an actor over time. And certainly, you know, in the last number of movies, The Lost City had a very funny cameo. funnier than anything he does in this film, and he was wonderful in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. You know, he has a film coming out in December with Margot Robbie that sounds promising. He's threatened to retire as an actor, but I usually don't believe those things. He's really the only reason to see this movie, I think, unless you just want to see one long, overlong trailer of smash and grab. But I did like also Brian Tyree Henry. I thought he's really funny and deserves to be in a center of a movie.
Maybe soon. Bullet Train is out now in wide release. The film is rated R. Next up, the comedy Easter Sunday. It stars actor and comedian Joe Coy. The director is Jay Chandrasekhar, and the film was co-written by Kate Angelo and Ken Chang. Coming up later this hour, I talk with Joe Coy, so stick around for that. Tim, what do you think of Easter Sunday?
Well, yeah, you know you've made it as a culture when you get one of these films. A big, usually family-oriented comedy designed to present your culture to a mainstream audience, but also to itself authentically, more or less, and to say, this is who we are. Even all the nutty bits, and we're good with it. And generally speaking, they kind of work, and they're kind of all the same. For Black folks, it's Fridays and Barbershop and all those Madea films. My Mexican-American folks, films like Tortilla Soup and Born in East L.A. There was a big one called Crazy Rich Asians a few years ago. This one focuses on the very unique Filipino culture. So you got Joe, who's half a Filipino and half white, and brings that very specific perspective to this film, too. He's this mid-level, mid-career comedian. His biggest claim to fame is being the catch line guy for this beer commercial, which is not even running anymore, so he's not making any more money from that. But he's up for a part in a sitcom, not the lead, but the funny friend, you know, because he's the Filipino guy. The one dramatic issue in this film is whether or not Joe is going to do this Filipino accent in the show. It's an accent that he does when he does his stage routine, his stand-up comedy, basically making fun of his mother's accent. But it's a very, very different thing to do it on stage where the accent is the thing people will be laughing at and out of context. And the producers of the show just don't seem to get that, all of which matters, of course. And, you know, this movie is about a guy who has all kinds of demands from family. His mother wants him to come up there for Easter. He has his son who lives with his ex-wife who's married to a professional hockey player, which means a white dude. He's always missing his son's function, so he drags him on this road trip. And then we get into this wacky comedy up in Daly City involving his goofy cousin with something called a hype truck, which is like a food truck, but there's no food. It's just like hype stuff, which I think is like cool stuff, but I don't know. There are these
cool stuff, but stolen.
Yeah, including apparently twice stolen Manny Pacquiao's boxing gloves and so on. It starts slow, but finishes strong, I thought. In movies like this, the comedian, with the comedian at the center, there's always going to be a moment when the comedian has to stop the movie to do their routine, to do the thing that made them famous in the first place. And this one comes by that legit. They're in this church on Easter Sunday, and the pastor just calls Joe up, hands him a microphone, and he does, you know, 10 minutes for the congregation. And I'm like, you know what? You came by it legit. Tiffany Haddish is shoehorned into the film, playing a cop and an ex-girlfriend. She does 5 minutes. Lou Diamond Phillips is even jammed into this movie because he's not Mexican or Native American. He's part Filipino, and I think he said Irish or something like that. So you have these movies, and it means that a culture has arrived in America. I'm happy that my Filipino brothers and sisters are here. This is pretty funny. Starts slow, finishes strong. Today, I think I'm going to watch Barbershop.
Easter Sunday is in wide release, and it's rated PG-13. So stick around for my conversation with comedian Joe Coy, who stars in the film. That's coming up later in the hour. Next up, the comedy horror Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. It stars Amanda Sternberg, Maria Bakalova, and Myla Harrod, and Pete Davidson and Lee Pace. The film is directed by Helena Ryan and written by Sarah Delap and Kristen Rupenian. Christy, what do you think of Bodies, Bodies, Bodies?
Oh, I loved it. It is so sharp and so smart and just this really like of the moment satire of privilege and of performative liberalism. And it's about all these friends in their early 20s. They're all wealthy and vapid, and they go to Pete Davidson's character's sprawling mansion. I mean, like ridiculously gigantic. Like it's laughable how giant it is. This mansion somewhere in upstate New York, Westchester County maybe. And there's a hurricane coming. And so they decide rather than, you know, actually be safe, They're going to go up to his mansion and just do every drug imaginable and play in the pool and just get wasted and make out with each other and just be hedonistic. It's just like any excuse will do, and this is a good one. And while they are there, they decide to play this parlor game called Bodies, 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 which is kind of similar to the Jack the Ripper game that they play this season on Only Murders in the Building, where everyone gets a piece of paper and one of them has an X on it. And if you get the X, you're the killer. They turn the lights off. If you get tapped on the shoulder, you're dead. And everyone's got to figure out who the murderer is. But over the course of playing this game, not only do they reveal long-held resentments, people actually start dying. So it is an interesting crucible of who they really are, you know, when there's nowhere else to go, and an examination of who they pretend to be, like who they present to the world. Because all these young women are putting on like this badass chick persona, like there's total bravado. They'll smack each other across the face and then do a shot and then make out with each other. And it's all like a facade to protect themselves from whatever insecurities or vulnerabilities they actually have. At the same time, the script is so funny and so smart about like the words that we all use today to say like, I'm an ally, or you're silencing me, or, you know, I've got a podcast and it's really hard to do a podcast. And it's very smart. Like it's got the ear for how people talk today in trying to say all the right things and maybe seeming rather insincere in doing so. I laughed a lot. I like Maria Bakalova in this a lot. She's sort of our conduit into this world because she's not super wealthy. She doesn't know any of them. And she's got to ride this tricky line where she's our entryway to this group, but also she's got to hold back some mystery because she might be a suspect as well. Pete Davidson's really funny in it. There's some great twists in it. So I very much dug it.
You can catch Bodies, Bodies, Bodies at various AMC theaters. The film is in wider release starting August 12th. It's rated R. Next up, the animated adventure comedy Luck stars the voices of Jane Fonda and Whoopi Goldberg. The film is directed by Peggy Holmes and written by Keel Murray. Charles, why don't you get us started on Luck?
Well, this was one of the big question marks for animation this year. This is the first feature from the Skydance studio, which comes in with a lot of money, a lot of talent, an ambitious slate of films in the works. And I was hoping to like it and did not. Our main character is a spunky, of course, heroine who's just aged out of the orphanage system. She's trying to live on her own, but she's only concerned about getting one of her friends who's still at the orphanage adopted. But she is plagued with bad luck. You know, her toast falls butter side down. She bangs into things. Then she encounters a talking cat and gets a lucky penny. And rather than trying to use the luck to maybe succeed in the thing she's trying to do, she just wants to get it to the kid who's still in the orphanage, but ends up with the cat in the land of luck. And that's where it really falls apart, because there are bits taken rather shamelessly from Monsters, Inc. and from Inside Out. And Inside Out was built very beautifully around the very human truth that no moment of happiness is completely untinged by sadness. Even at your wedding or some other lovely event, there's the, oh, I wish grandma could have lived to see this. It was such a human, warm film. They try and make the same good and bad luck sort of substitute for emotions, but luck, even if you concede it exists, is something external. It's not internal. It gets very talky. It gets very gimmicky. It stays derivative. And if a movie with a talking black cat can't win me over, you know it's in trouble. And it was just a big disappointment.
Christy, you have 30 seconds to talk about how much you didn't love this film.
I hated this movie so much. The character design is so rubbery and off-putting, and the central character is so boring. Like, no matter what happens to her, she's just cheerfully bumbling and stumbling through life, and it is so bland and so boring, and you don't know how she feels about anything. How does she feel about being 18 and being on her own her whole life because she did not get adopted? Like, there's just nothing to her, and so her evolution means nothing. The contrivances are bountiful, and it's totally a ripoff of Monsters, Inc. in terms of the lab where the luck gets made. Somewhere in here is an interesting idea about the merits of failure and about the perils of lawnmower parenting.
Luck is rated G. You can find it Showtime's online. Coming up next, more reviews and my interview with actor and comedian Joe Coy from Easter Sunday. Stay with us.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
It's Film Week on KPCC. Welcome back. I'm John Horn, subbing in for Larry Mantle this week. Let's jump right back in. We're discussing the biggest releases of the week. Next, we have the Rwandan drama Munyo Rengabo, starring Jeff Rudakanoga and Eric Ndurukundiye. The film is directed by Lee Isaac Chung, who also wrote the film with Samuel Gray Anderson. This film was actually first released way back in 2007, but it just became available to stream. Peter, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a terrific movie, which I had not seen before. As you mentioned, it was made in 2007. It was Lee Isaac Chung's directorial debut. He's since gone on to do Minari. This is it's a very powerful movie about these two friends from different tribes, the Hutu and Tutsi in Rwanda. And it starts in a scene in Kigali. One of the boys steals a machete, and the two are going back to their old village where the other friend, Sangwa, has not been in 3 years, supposedly just to sort of touch bases after the absence. But in fact, when Nyirangabo wants to murder a man who killed his parents during the genocide in 1994. So in the village, there's a lot of tense sequences between Sangwa and his parents, particularly his father, who really disdains the boy for leaving. But ultimately, the friendship between the two boys is fraught because they're from different tribes, and Sangwa's father especially doesn't want him consorting with anyone from a hostile tribe that was responsible for genocide, and so it's very complicated, and ultimately the friendship is dissolved in a very powerful scene. There's a lot of sort of vaguely magic realism to this film, as well as a lot of sort of almost neo-realist semi-documentary stuff. It was filmed in one of the villages. It was took 11 days to film, and they used mostly non-actors. Lee Isaac Chung originally was involved as a film teacher in Rwanda because his wife was working there as an art therapist and a volunteer after the genocide, and he used a lot of students in the filmmaking class to participate in the film, as well as students and orphanage kids. And, you know, it's all primitively sophisticated, if I can put it that way, because it really has tremendous emotional resonance. The irony is I like this film a great deal more than Minari, which is the film that he's most known for. But I thought this was a really auspicious debut, and it's really great that it's sort of getting an airing now. Film Movement, that's streaming it, is also going to be showing two other films, pre-Minari films of Chung as well.
Munyo Rengabo is streaming on Film Movement Plus. It's in Kinyarwanda with English subtitles, and it is unrated. Next up, Prey. It's an action drama starring Amber Midthunder, Stormy Kipp, and Dakota Beavers. The film is directed by Dan Trachtenberg and written by Patrick Azan. Christy.
You may think that you don't need another Predator film in your life, but you need this one because it is awesome. This is a prequel to Predator. This takes place 300 years ago in the far northern plains in this Comanche tribe. This young woman, teenager warrior, played by Amber Midthunder, her name is Naru, is ready to prove herself. She's really good with medicine and with healing. She's an important part of her village, but she wants to do more. She wants to hang with the guys and she wants to show them that she is ready. And we see her quietly training and preparing herself. She is ready for the challenge of tracking a thing that is tracking you. And what that ends up being is a predator. And it is such a cool combination of just these gorgeous vistas and just the naturalism and the quiet of this area up there with really cool special effects. I wish I had seen this on a big screen. It's playing on Hulu, but I really wish I had seen it because it's just gorgeous and it is so intense. It is so fun. Like over and over again, I was watching it going, oh my God, oh no, oh, it's Predator versus Bear. And my husband's like, what are you watching? I'm like, I'm watching the Predators prequel and it's awesome. It is so much fun. Amber Midthunder is really good in this. She's done a few films prior to this. She was in that Liam Neeson Ice Road Truckers movie a couple of years back. And she's got to convey so much just through her quiet confidence, through her physicality, but also you watch her learn and test herself and become vulnerable and get scared and rise above it. And it's just thrilling to watch. It's a lot of fun. And just the effects are so cool. The way they use the predator, you know, of course it's a space alien creature, and it can camouflage itself and it can also be see-through, but sometimes you can see it and it has acid for blood and it makes that sound, that really terrifying little staccato sound. And then to watch how she figures it out and to watch how she figures out its weaknesses and how to outsmart it, given that she's got nothing even remotely like that kind of technology available to her, is so cool. Anyway, it's really fun. I wish it were getting a theatrical run, but Prey, go check it out on Hulu.
That is the action drama Prey. The film is rated R and it is now streaming on Hulu. Next, we have the foreign documentary Faith. It's about a devoted group of warrior monks who live in self-isolation in Italy. The film is directed by the late Valentina Pedicini. Peter.
This is a surpassingly weird movie. The director, who sadly passed away in her early 40s, went 11 years ago to this monastery in Bolzano, Italy, a sort of remote monastery with these monks, and filmed a short film, but then she felt she really hadn't done it justice. So 11 years later, she went back and did this stark black and white documentary with no narration, no telling you who's what, where, or when. But the monastery was founded about 20 years ago. They call themselves the Warriors of Light. The Master, capital M, is the guy that rules over it. And there's about 20 shaven-headed, white-clad devotees, men and women, white-clad, so lots of white-on-white subtitles, spoiler alert. And there is sort of a mixture of devout Catholicism and Kung Fu and Zen, Shaolin, a doctrine, and a mishmash of stuff that doesn't really go together, but that's how they operate. It's a cult, essentially. They are there to serve humanity on the day of the apocalypse, and they are all martial artists, some of them quite accomplished. And a lot of the film just shows you them working out under extreme duress from the master in building up their body and their devotion. There are even a couple of toddlers who are taught boxing. There's combat training. We see them dancing to German techno music at raves. It's a very strange movie. What we don't find out is really exactly who these people are, how they got to be there, and a lot of what they sort of attempt to accomplish, if anything. So it's a sort of abstraction, but it's rather hypnotic. It's beautifully shot, and it's not like any other film I've seen.
And do they share when the day of the apocalypse is coming so we can mark it down in our calendars?
Oh, I'm not sure, but
okay. Yeah. Don't want to spoil that one. Faith is streaming on Film Movement Plus. It's in Italian with English subtitles, and it's unrated. Next up, the comedy drama I Love My Dad. The film is written and directed by James Morosini, who also stars in the film alongside Patton Oswalt, Claudia Slukie, and Rachel Dratch. Christy, why don't you get us started on I Love My Dad?
This is a crazy story, but this actually happened to the writer-director star James Morosini. So it is about a guy whose estranged father catfishes him. He reaches out to him through a fake Facebook account just to keep tabs on him and just to have some kind of relationship with him because the son wants like no part of him at all. And it grows increasingly intense pretty quickly and intimate and sexual in ways that are incredibly cringe-inducing and very funny, but also lead to some moments of like genuine sweetness here. So Patton Oswalt is not really in his son's life anymore, as we find out, you know, through an opening kind of montage of voice messages. He's just sort of bailed. There's always some kind of excuse or some kind of reason why he can't be around. And so at this point, the son, who's an adult, is like, I have no time for this. I just need to get away from this person, and blocks him on his phone and on all social media. Patton Oswalt's character gets the idea from a coworker played by Lil Rel Howery to just like make a fake Facebook profile and just like see what's going on with him. But he takes that way too many steps further because it just feels so good to connect. So many cringe-inducing moments here. Claudia Saluski is pretty good as the young woman who is the face of this. She's a waitress at the diner that Patton Oswalt likes to go to all the time. And so he uses that picture and that name and that persona as the fake girlfriend. And the way that they visually depict the back and forths is very clever because it's not just, you know, looking at two people sitting in front of computer screens or phones typing to each other. That'd be boring. They actually insert Claudia Saluski into it, into, you know, hanging out on the living room couch watching a movie or going running together or, you know, being more and more intimate. And, you know, they're building intention quite skillfully to the moment of truth when you know he's going to be found out. So it's really funny and really sweet, and it goes to some places.
Peter, did you love I Love My Dad?
Not entirely, no. I mean, I think the operative word here is cringy. That's, you know, I think intentional, but nevertheless, it made me cringe. Patton Oswalt is a, you know, one of those comic actors who can do drama very well. So I had no problem with his performance here. But the role itself, you know, he's playing this father who is in this elaborate catfish scheme, which gets, you know, increasingly bizarre and weird, and, you know, including making out with his son in some of the scenes. So, you know, you wonder, well, is this really... is there something else going on with the father here? You know, is there some retribution or revenge or you know, martyrdom or something that's going on with the father in setting up this relationship with this you know, faux faith Facebook friend girl and his son? In other words, there's not a psychological level underneath what we're watching, which I think would have helped with the queasy factor. But it does have, you know, a certain twist to it that I think is unusual for a kind of movie like this. James Morosini, I don't think, is a terribly expressive actor, which would have helped. But Claudia Saluski is quite good as the girl. And, you know, it's always missed, I think, when she's not on screen.
That's the comedy drama I Love My Dad. It's screening at multiple Lemley Theaters and Harkins Theater Mountain Grove in Redlands. The film is rated R. Next up, the animated comedy Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie, as opposed, I guess, to Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the opera. It stars Ben Schwartz, Omar Benson Miller, and Braden Michael Smith. The film is directed by Andy Soriano and Ant Ward, both whom are making their feature directorial debuts. Tony Gamalobo and Rebecca May wrote the screenplay. Charles.
Well, I kind of like the idea of an operatic version of the Turtles. They've already covered classical art. You know, why not have Monteverdi, Mozart, Puccini, and Verdi as four cousins? Thank God they have returned to 2D with these characters. Those live-action humanoid things were just so repulsively ugly to look at. These characters were initially comic book characters. They're two-dimensional. They belong that way. The movie is very fly, very fey, very meta. Lots of in-jokes, lots of pizza. what's interesting is that the filmmakers have clearly been looking at the work of the Japanese studio Triggerfish, particularly their recent feature Promare, for ideas for this, because the big drawn out battle to end all battles involves a lot of the same use of color and very angular graphics and weird spinning cones and so forth. If you like the Ninja Turtles, if you're an adolescent boy, you're going to have a lot of fun with this. If you go in there expecting something operatic in its grandeur and breadth and scope, no. But for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fans, it delivers.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie, is out on Netflix. It's rated TVY7 for older kids. My thanks to critics Christy Lemire, Peter Rayner, Tim Cogshell, and Charles Solomon for joining us this week. One quick note, Peter recommends Alma's Rainbow, which opens Sunday at the Los Feliz Theater. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can head over to kpcc.org, where you can listen to full episodes of Film Week anytime, or download full episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up, my conversation with comedian and actor Joe Coy on his role in the new movie Easter Sunday. I'm John Horn, in for Larry Mantle. More Film Week when we come back.
Support comes from Japan House LA presenting Yes, Kawaii is Art. Express yourself. Kawaii translates to cute or adorable, yet its influence extends beyond aesthetics to encompass fashion, art, technology, and even social behavior. Sebastian Masuda, the king of kawaii, brings together multiple artworks unraveling the kawaii concepts to foster a sense of joy, innocence, and community as a tool for self-expression and representation. Visitors can step into this colorful world to feel the aesthetic for themselves. May 2nd to November 3rd. No admissions fee. More at japanhousela.com.
Welcome back to Film Week. I'm John Horn, in for Larry Mantle. Joe Coy is a Filipino-American comedian and actor. He has starred in two Netflix comedy specials, Live from Seattle and Coming in Hot. Now he's playing a version of himself and a version of his life in the film Easter Sunday. Coy plays a character who's not only trying to balance work and parenting, but also dealing with Hollywood producers who want him to speak with a foreign accent, which he doesn't have. I started by asking Coy about the importance of representation and making a movie about a Filipino family. So, first question, your movie is called Easter Sunday, and as far as I know, it's not Easter. And I'm not making this up, but Friday is National Underwear Day and National Water Balloon Day, depending on your mood. So,
okay.
Easter Sunday is coming out on National Underwear Day. Is that how it works now?
I asked Dan and the whole team over at Amblin, when is it National Underwear Day? And they said it was today. So yeah, tomorrow actually. So that's when I go, we have to release the movie then. To be honest, you know what happened? It was supposed to be released April, but just the theaters, just, you know, the mask mandate just got lifted and people weren't going to the theaters. And this is the beautiful thing about Steven Spielberg, is he wanted this movie to have a great shot at being in the theaters. And he was like, let's move it and we'll keep the name. And that's what happened.
I think every movie has a weird origin story. Yours, as I understand it, is pretty crazy. So correct me if I'm wrong. You're having sushi at the Beverly Hills restaurant, Sugarfish, and you're trying to eat, and somebody's taking pictures of you while you're trying to eat. So you move and take a seat at the bar. And then this guy next to you doesn't leave you alone. And it turns out he's producer Dan Lin. So what happened?
To be honest, that the two girls that were taking pictures of me, and they were very sweet. Don't get me wrong. It's just like I was eating. And so we moved to the sushi bar. My friend Chase DeRusso sat next to me. And I was like, dude, you're not going to believe this. But they're still like kind of like taking pictures and stuff and like videos. And it's just kind of annoying. And he goes, how about if I do this? And he kind of turns his body and leans back. So he's blocking the camera. But when he does that, Dan Lin is sitting next to him, and now he sees a clear shot of me, and he goes like this. He goes, hi, Joe Coy. So now I'm like, oh God. And I don't know who Dan is. You know what I mean? I don't know that this is the guy that produced It 1, It 2, you know, Aladdin, all the Lego movies. I don't know who this guy is. And he's just so sweet and so nice. And he was complimenting me and talking about my stand-up. And it was just such a great meeting. And I loved how it all organically happened.
The organic part of it is even crazier. Dan probably told you this. And only in Hollywood do you have a Pilates instructor who comes to your house. But his white Pilates instructor comes to his house and says she's really tired because she was out late watching comedy, I think in Oxnard. And Dan's like, who are you watching? And she goes, this guy named Joe Coy. And he's like, who is he? And she's like, check him out. And I think at that point, you were just doing YouTube videos. Is that right?
At that point, the last time I had a special was like in 2011 or something like that. So it's like, it basically what was keeping me afloat was whatever was online at that point, you know? So And this is a perfect example of, this is so cool. You're the first person to ever do this and say this question, because now you just opened my eyes to something that I never even thought of. But you're right. It was a white Pilates instructor. And you go to Hollywood to try and, try and get your voice out there and be heard. You know what I mean? I was a storyteller. Like I enjoyed hearing other comics that told their story, and I enjoyed relating to that. So I was telling my story about my mom, and I know you can relate to it, but for some reason in the industry, everyone was the same note was like, oh, it's too specific. No one's going to get it. And it bothered me. And now that you said that, how ironic that a white instructor basically told an Asian man about this guy's Asian routine that for some reason is specific, but it's not, because it's obviously relatable if this white lady drove all the way to Oxnard to come see me. I never even looked at it that way.
The movie is, I assume, kind of a macro adaptation of your story and your family's story, but in a micro sense, in specific incidents and things that happen, how much of real life is peppered through this movie? Things that actually happened to you, like the audition, is that part of your own story?
Yeah, I mean, thank you, Ken Chang, for writing the first draft. But what's beautiful about this movie is we got to add so much, a lot of it. You know, Jay Chandrasekhar, great director, also great actor, great producer. He and I collaborated in a lot of scenes that we rewrote. And then, of course, Katie came in and she punched up a lot and wrote a lot of scenes. And we came up with this, and it was so much fun, because that was the one thing I wanted to tell him. I was like, look, it's going to be specific about Filipinos, but I want it to be heavily relatable. I want it to be a family story, but we also have to explain my culture. I want people to learn about my culture as well. But at the same time, just walk away going, hey, my mom is just like his mom. Like, so when you see the stuff like the Balakbayan box, where we're loading up gifts into the box, that's exactly how it is. And, you know, I'm not going to say all Filipinos, but damn near all of them. You know what I mean? And that's the beauty about learning about immigrant people that come to this country. You know, for some reason, when we see an immigrant come to this country, we think, okay, you won. So stop complaining. You're American now. You're successful. But they don't understand that when they come here, their responsibility is not only to take care of the family that they came here with, but they got a bunch of people back home that they have to take care of. And they're going to take whatever little money that they make here and give it back to them. And when you see stuff like that Balakbayan box, you're going to learn about, you know, that Filipino coworker that you work with, and just understand and appreciate just how much is riding on her back at this same job that you have. You know, so the Balakbayan box, the Santa Nino, all that stuff is literally from my life.
You talk about your mom, or a fictionalized version of your mom is very prominent in this story. Your mom comes to the country, and I'm not talking about assimilation. I'm talking about being seen and having a community. There's no social media, no Facebook. She doesn't have any way probably to figure out who her people are. And again, this is not about assimilation. This is about finding people that you have something in common with.
Yes.
Was part of her life experience part of what formed your view of how Asians are seen in this country?
You know, it's hard to speak to a generation now and really explain what an immigrant had to go through back in the 60s and 70s and the racism that they had to deal with and the way they were depicted and seen, you know, through media, you know, and you know, the stuff that my mom had to have a thick skin, you know, just to see a cartoon with an Asian character, buck-tooth and slant-eyed, but was funny to everyone, but they had to suck it up and take it and just be like, hey, I'm just happy I'm here. Okay, that's normal. So you think that's funny? Okay. And that's one thing we need to explain to this generation, the they had to go through. It was horrible. And yes, my mom had to literally, I do the joke on stage about my mom would walk up to people that were just brown. Like literally, she would go to church, one, you know, because it's church, you know, that's the one time where she feels accepted because everyone in church believes in the same person. So we're all the same today in church. But as she's listening to the sermon, she's looking around trying to find other people that are Filipino. And if she saw someone that's a little darker skin, she would walk up to them. You know how much courage that has to be to walk up to somebody you don't know and ask them what they are. And my mom did it all the time. I would watch her as a kid. So that's why this movie is so important. And that's why it's like, you know, it hurts when to think that she came to this country in 1969 and here we are at 2022. And this is going to be the first time she's ever seen this ever. So we can't close the door anymore. We got to keep that door open and make this possible, not just for Filipinos, but for every immigrant that comes to this country. Let them feel seen. Let them feel heard.
Coming up, more of my conversation with actor and comedian Joe Coy about his role in the new movie Easter Sunday. It's Film Week on KPCC. Welcome back to Film Week. I'm John Horn, in for Larry Mantle. Let's return now to my conversation with Joe Coy. He's the star of the new movie, Easter Sunday. What I suspect you're trying to work at is, I might be Filipino, Filipino-American, and I have a crazy family, just like you have a crazy family. Okay. This isn't something that is ethnically true. This is something that is authentic about people who have parents.
Exactly. Yeah, and in my stand-up, it's like, and here's the thing. I think the reason why I'm successful and why I'm able to sell the tickets that I do to the wide demographic that I have is I think people are also saying, finally, we get to hear another story, a different version, and relate to it. And they're entertained by it. They love it. They love coming and seeing my mom yell at me at the top of her lungs. I'm like, you know, when I do the jokes about her on stage and because people are like relating to it. Like I get every ethnicity walking up to me at the end of the show going, my mom did the same shit. And it feels good. It feels good to hear that. It feels good for me. It feels good for Filipinos. And then it also feels good for people that aren't Filipino, that my mom is not just the only crazy mom out there. There are crazy moms all over the world. And that's what we need to hear. We need to hear more of those stories, not just Filipino specific. I want to hear everyone's story about your family. I want to hear about your family. I want to learn about your family and then laugh with your family the same way we laugh at mine.
I want to ask you about the role that streamers are now playing in comedians' careers. And this is a movie that's debuting in theaters. But on the one hand, there are more options than there ever were when you can do a comedy special. It might be on Netflix, but it might be on another channel. It might be on HBO. But it also feels like any one special might have less of an impact than it once did because there's so many of them now. So does it cut both ways in terms of how it can be a great tool to get noticed? But to get noticed, you have to kind of escape the clutter of all the other comedians who are out there doing streaming specials?
One, I love the fact that there are a ton of platforms out there for stand-up comics to go and call their home. I love that. Why should there only be one gatekeeper like there was in the past? Because it sucked. There was a lot of comics that needed to get out there and we had to rely on one person or one platform, you know what I mean? And it sucked. There was a lot of times where I got passed, you know, and someone else got the green light, and I'm just sitting there going, well, what did I do wrong? And that sucked, because I didn't do anything wrong. It was just like they had to pick, and there was only a certain amount of money that they could spend for a certain amount of specials. But now we got all kinds of specials out there, and we got a ton of platforms where people can be seen. Yes, there's a lot of crap, and yes, there's a lot of greats, and I love that.
Here's something that I am struggling with. So in your movie, Easter Sunday, your character refuses to do an accent in an audition rather than speak. And what you and your character's voice is, I guess we could say it's a very Americanized voice. But in your Netflix special in Hawaii, this is something you say. We're going to play a little clip from the Hawaii special.
Vietnamese, I love Vietnamese people. I love you. You're the smallest of the Asians. You're smaller. I had one run up to me at the end of the show. Hey, dude, what you say to me like that, dude? They talk real fast. You know they talk that fast. They talk like that, real fast, like, dude, what you say to me like that, dude? They talk real fast like that, dude. Koreans sound like they've been smoking weed all day.
So here's where I'm struggling. You talked about your mom watching cartoons where there's a characterized depiction of an Asian. And now you're making, correct me if I'm wrong, a caricature of what a Vietnamese person sounds like. So why is one bad and one okay?
That's a great question, too. One, if you ever seen what my mom saw, it's a horrible caricature. And it was probably written and produced by a white person with the intent to make fun of and make them feel like a cartoon. That was Bucktooth with big glasses and closed eyes, and the voice being done by a person that's not Asian and saying things like chong hang, pong pong hang. Yes, that to me is extremely racist. But if you listen to the joke, you're going to hear what I say. Only if they have accents, you can tell us apart. That's my way of throwing back to us not being lumped together as one. Now, two, I'm not doing a bad impersonation or a caricature of the Vietnamese accent. It is spot on. Once again, man, it's like, Vietnamese people live in this country and they feel invisible. It's that one moment on a huge platform in front of hundreds of millions of people, and they sit there and they watch it and they go, that's dope. That's us. He's talking about us. And he's doing it in a cool way. I'll get people that come to me that aren't Asian and they're going, well, then why can't I do it? Because you're doing it in a way where you want to make fun of, and it's offensive.
You talked just a second ago about invisibility. There was a study done a year ago by the Annenberg Inclusion Initiative at USC, and they looked at the 100 most popular films over the last 13 years. Asian American and Pacific Islanders accounted for not even 6% of characters in those 1,300 movies. And when you look at leads or co-leads, 3.3%. So obviously the percentage of Asian Americans in APIs is higher than 3.3%. And yet Hollywood doesn't acknowledge that. So we know that's a problem. What is the consequence of that problem when people like you or your children might aspire to perform and they don't see themselves in that job? It almost creates a circle where you can't break in because you don't picture yourself as that person.
It's like not even a percentage. Like that percentage that you just gave, you might as well just throw it in the trash. You might as well just say zero representation at all. It's like, how do you not recognize the fact that these immigrants come to this country and not only speak their language fluently, but damn near speak your language better than you? But yet you're not going to give them any parts, any leads. And I know I keep going specifically to Filipino, but that's because that's me, you know, I'm speaking on behalf of me. But imagine my mom who I hate to stereotype, but Filipinos are nurses. That's their way. They learn English fluently from birth. They know that's their way out. You know what I mean? Let's just put it out there. That's our way out. Learn how to speak English. Do good customer service. Get into nursing school and healthcare because that's where the job security is. It's very strategic. And for you to have TV show after TV show after TV show that involves doctors and nurses and not see one nurse being played by a Filipino, it's offensive. It's racist. It's oppressive. That's gotta hurt, man. It's gotta hurt bad.
That was comedian and actor Joe Coy. His movie Easter Sunday is now playing in wide release. If you missed out on any of what our critics had to say about the film, just head over to kpcc.org where you can listen to full episodes of Film Week anytime or download full episodes wherever you get your podcasts. From all of us at Film Week, have a great weekend.
Support comes from Ciclavia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclavia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclavia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.